The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Howdy, folks. Meet you, Fetlocks here with a little song about Kevin McCarthy, the new Speaker of the House. If you'd any doubt at all that Kev's a moron, having won the speakership, he then thanked Trump. He thanked the guy who tried to end democracy, without which there'd be no need for McCarthy. If you'd any doubt at all that Kev is spineless and a shameless lump of well-groomed wasted space, you can tell by what he said that both his soul and brain are dead. And with that said, I believe I rest my case.
And in parentheses, it says, sorry, I just don't have much time for someone as shamelessly self-promoting as Kevin McCarthy. Kevin's an idiot. And with that, Mangy Fetlocks gets us started for a Monday. So did you stay up late Friday night? Because honestly, I didn't mean to, but I did. I started watching, and I couldn't stop. It was just horrible. It was horrible. It really was. The whole spectacle from Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz being the kind of the last holdouts and the ones who screwed it up so that they were supposed to end on the 14th vote, but it took 15 because these two morons were there because they just apparently Lauren Boebert screwed up on the 14th vote because she was supposed to vote for somebody, I guess not McCarthy, but she was going to vote for Matt Gaetz. That way she'd be recorded as having voted, but voted against McCarthy, which is what they needed for the numbers. So then when she screwed it up, then it was left up to Matt Gaetz, and he was supposed to vote present. I mean, he was supposed to then vote for McCarthy, and instead he voted present, and that's when all hell broke loose. And, I thought I'd be vindicated. Well, that my prediction would be true in that, we would not still have a speaker. But they almost came to blows. And then all of a sudden, they were going to adjourn for the night, for the weekend, and come back today. And then all of a sudden, Matt Gaetz said something to Kevin McCarthy, like, okay, I'll do it. And then they said, all right, we're going to do another vote. Oh my God, it was just a spectacle and everything you'd expect. And I guess things are no better today. Honestly, I haven't been watching. Tonight, they're supposed to vote on the rules package. The problem is Kevin McCarthy has 4 votes to spare now. And the things that he promised the insurrectionists, or the crazy caucus, as I call them, in order to be named speaker, which basically strips him of all his power, the things he promised them. However, he promised them things that he did not have the authority to promise. They're not up to him. They will be voted on by the entire House in this rules package. And, well, even though I've not watched it all today, really, I needed to just get away from it. I have a feeling that it's going to be like deja vu all over again. didn't we just go through that last week? Oh my God. I'll tell you, it was all just horrible. until, and I was shocked by this, and I can't believe I'm going to say it, because you know me. You know I am not a huge. I'm not any kind of Kevin McCarthy fan. I'm not any kind of Hakeem Jeffries fan either. And when Hakeem Jeffries got up to, I guess, hand the gavel over to Kevin McCarthy, he made a speech. Now, he wasn't reading from a teleprompter, and he didn't have a script, although I understand he did have some notes, which is to be expected, given that he delivered a pretty epic speech. Now, again, not a big Hakeem fan. However, I got to give him his props. This speech was great, and the high point of it was the A to Z about the differences between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Well, we do extend our hand of partnership to you and want to make clear that we extend and intend to try to find common ground whenever and wherever possible on behalf of the American people.
Okay.
Not as Democrats, not as Republicans, not as independents, but as Americans.
Yep, as Americans. Okay, now bring us the A to Z.
I also want to make clear that we will never compromise our principles.
Okay.
House Democrats will always put American values over autocracy, mm-hmm. benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, uh-huh. freedom over fascism,
yeah.
governing over gaslighting,
oh, yeah.
hopefulness over hatred,
yeah.
inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity mm-hmm. over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over obstruction,
yeah.
people over politics,
uh-huh.
quality of life issues over QAnon,
yeah.
reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness,
yeah.
voting rights over voter suppression,
Ooh.
Working families over the well-connected, xenial over xenophobia, yes we can over you can't do it, and zealous representation over zero sum power.
Hell yeah. Wow.
We will always do the right thing by the American people.
Awesome.
So let us not grow weary of doing good, for the American people will reap the benefit of the harvest if we do not give up. God bless you, God bless the House,
right.
and God bless the United States of America.
All right. Again, as David said in the chat room, still not a huge Hakeem Jeffries fan. However, I'll keep an eye on him. That was pretty damn good. Right? It was. It just was. You can't deny it. So that happened. And so we wake up Saturday and it's like, ugh, all right. Or we wake up Sunday, sorry. Or no, Saturday. That was Friday night, Saturday morning. Oy, it all runs together. Then tell me you were surprised when you heard there was an insurrection in Brazil. Of course you weren't surprised, because you saw it coming, because you know that that Donald Trump loves Jair Bolsonaro, right? So here's what happened. Bolsonaro lost the election to Lula, who was the president before, and then he got sent to jail and the whole thing. And well, and now he's out, right? Now I'm trying to find, damn it, I posted a photograph and now I can't find it. And part of the problem is Mastodon is so difficult to figure out. Hold on. Now I can't find it. What I'm looking for is a photograph that I sent out. I think I put it on Mastodon. Let me see if I can find it here. Is it there? No. I don't know what I did with it. Oh, there it is. I found it. Okay, hold on. Let me do it this way because I want to share it with you because I'm trying to make a point here. And those of you who are, you know, listening to an audio stream and not seeing the video, it's okay. I'm going to explain to you what I'm putting up on the screen. This is a photograph of Ivanka Trump holding a baby. Who is this baby? Tell me, do tell us. So it's Ivanka Trump holding a little baby in between the baby's parents. Now, the baby's parents happen to be, hold on, I want to make sure I get the names correct. I know the last name. The last name is Bolsonaro. Yeah. So I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. That is Eduardo, the father there to Ivanka's left, and probably is Eduardo Bolsonaro, and I'm guessing his wife and baby. This photograph was taken at the White House on January 4th, 2021. That would be 2 days, count them, 2 days before the insurrectionists stormed the Capitol. Eduardo Bolsonaro was in Washington, D.C. By the way, Ivanka is that little baby's godmother. Now, I know you're thinking, wait a minute, I thought she's Jewish. Jewish people don't have godparents. Well, or aren't godparents. Well, I guess when you're talking about the Bolsonaro family and the Trump family, yeah, I guess they are. So Ivanka Trump is Jair Bolsonaro's grandson's godmother. Got that? Bear with me because I'm trying to keep it all straight here. Not only that, Eduardo was hanging with Donald after the insurrection. He met with him. And now Jair, Papa Bolsonaro, the deposed leader whose followers attempted an insurrection storming the Capitol, the Supreme Court, and the president's office or whatever in Brazil, and taking over for a while. It's now back under government control. Lula's, you know, government has control of it again. But, you know, not until after they did major damage. I mean, this was, it just was not good, right? And now Jair Bolsonaro, guess where he is? He fled Brazil because he was afraid his passport was going to be taken. Daddy, Grandpa Bolsonaro, is in Florida because of course he is. It's Florida. And Donald is here. And if you want to believe that one has nothing to do with the other, then you're not paying attention. So, insurrection copycats. Interesting. And, you know, Steve Bannon helped push this along as well. He's been tweeting, I guess he still tweets, I don't know, that the election, which, by the way, happened on October 30th, the election was rigged. It was stolen. It was a fraud. Are you kidding me? And these idiots are still claiming that what happened here on January 6th was not an insurrection. They're claiming that what you saw, what happened, did not actually happen. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes, right? So, keeping in mind that Friday was the second anniversary of the attempted coup, the beginning of the attempted coup, because believe me, it hasn't ended yet. These people, and I hesitated before I used that word, but I couldn't think of a better one to use at the moment that wouldn't be offensive. and I'm trying to be less offensive. These people, really, they have not given up. This is going to go on again. So on Friday, of course, Marcy Wheeler was here. And I thought that was the what we should do on that second anniversary. But on Thursday, I taped an interview with a photojournalist named Nate Gowdy, who was at the Capitol that day. He was there as a freelancer, but covering the event that was supposed to happen. We didn't know ahead of time it was going to be an insurrection, but some of us did. Some of us were warning people, stay away from D.C. on the 6th because it's going to be ugly. I knew it. You want to tell me the authorities didn't? Anyway, this photojournalist was there, Nate Gowdy, and he shot some pictures, but he thought it was worth more than just a little photo array on Rolling Stone magazine's website. So he published a book, and it's pretty damning. It's a book of photographs. So today is actually a good day to watch the show on video because I share a bunch of those photographs with you. We taped this again on Thursday. All the days are running together. So I guess with no further ado, hold on, I got to make sure that we don't have feedback when I do this. It's always a challenge when I hit it. All right, so to the videotape.
I guess with no further...
No.
Hold on, I got to make sure that...
Okay, well, that's not it. Oh, I see. Okay, first of all, why do I have audio coming back? And that's the wrong clip I played. Okay, let's try it this way.
Well, I'm happy to welcome our next guest, though I kind of hate the subject matter, but it's one we must talk about, and especially as this anniversary rolls around. So we are actually recording this interview on Thursday.
All right. Well, I'm happy
5th,
to welcome our next guest
for the second anniversary
subject
of
matter,
the uprising at the Capitol.
It's one we must talk about,
and
especially
what I call it,
as this
and that's
anniversary
what our guest Nate Gowdy calls it. It's in fact the title of his book, Insurrection. And Nate, this is a special book because you're a photojournalist. You were at the Capitol on January 6th, 2021, covering the event for Rolling Stone?
Yes, I was on assignment for them. It was my second time working with them.
And did you, what did you expect was going to happen that day?
I'd been to 30 MAGA rallies and Trump appearances leading up to that. And so I'd seen my fair share of toxic Americana, I expected more of the same, more or less, until the flight there the evening before. It was the first time in my life I'd been on a plane where the dichotomy of people's views was so in your face. Half the passengers were wearing the telltale red hats. Aye. And MAGA merch, and the other half were just people predominantly of color trying to get from one place to another in peace. And the MAGA crowd kept starting chants of USA, USA, and four more years, and it was obnoxious. And so I knew right then that this was going to be a little different, but I definitely didn't foresee it becoming deadly.
Wow, that was the flight into DC from where? Where were you coming from?
So I was I'd been in Atlanta covering the historic Senate runoffs in Georgia, and had flown and flew into Baltimore, and then took a train to D.C. Late on January 5th.
So when you got to the Capitol, and basically the book unfolds in chronological order. So the first photos, and it is a story told in photographs with a little bit of text as you explain what was going on. So you got there. In fact, the first photo that we see in the book is this one. I'm going to put it up on the screen real fast. We see people, for those just listening to an audio stream and not seeing the video, you see the Capitol in the background. You see four masked people, because this was right at the height of COVID, holding signs, Biden fraud elect, don't steal my vote, GOP sucks, and mm-hmm. Hill to die on. So were these some of the first people you encountered when you got there?
Yeah, that was that photo was a that wasn't actually my first photo. That was a trans photo or a transition photo after the introduction and forward. And but in the next photo is the first ones among the first I took that day. But the photo we just viewed was very soon after. And so, yeah.
So this one, the first one in the chronological order, 10:41:23 a.m. And these just look like people out in D.C. ready to have a good time.
Yeah. And many people, that's kind of, their president called them to D.C. and they were there to serve their president.
And so the day went on. When did you realize that this was not going to be a typical Trump rally? Was it early on when you see people masked and carrying what appears to be sort of makeshift weaponry?
Yeah, sure. I felt like I was running late. I was very tired after days in Atlanta and rural Georgia. And I was walking toward the Ellipse where I heard the crowd. And before I got there, in between the Capitol and the Washington Monument, I crossed paths with a contingent of who appeared to be militiamen chanting F-word Antifa. And they were equipped with, as you can see, concealed identities, ballistic helmets, tactical vests, you name it. And I immediately, the man in the middle on the picture on the right with the bullhorn, I'd photographed him several times in the years past. His name is Ethan Nordine, and I'm coming from Seattle. I'm Seattle based, and he's actually from Auburn, which is a suburb of Seattle. So I knew him to be a Proud Boy, a prominent Proud Boy lieutenant. And but I didn't know if it was just the Proud Boys or if it was a mixture of militants.
Yeah, but they were everywhere. Now, we had heard and we learned a lot of this stuff from the January 6th hearings, where we learned that that a lot of people were gathering outside of the area where the speech was being given at the Ellipse because they didn't want to go through the magnetometers. Could you tell what that was going on?
So I never made it there because I was alone and I was walking toward it. And I crossed paths with this large gang of, roughly 200 to 300 militants. And so I had a choice to make: go to Trump's rally where the rest of the press corps was or follow this story. You know, it was like as if these men were, the rally hadn't even started, I don't think. And it was almost as if they were ditching class early. You know, up to no good.
So at what point did you feel personally threatened? Like, did you ever feel really in danger?
Yeah. Almost exactly 10 minutes in into encountering them, I was attacked. I was lunged at, and that photograph's in the book. And a masked individual lunged at me and they started yelling that I was fake news and Antifa, even after I raised my arms and identified myself as a photojournalist for Rolling Stone. I had felt like my camera would offer me a little safety. You know, there's power in being able to take pictures and they're aware of optics too. But just 10 minutes in, they attacked me. And as you can see in the images, there are men in the wings ready to pounce if it escalated.
When you say men in the wings, you're talking about other insurgents or police?
The other insurgents in the photos on page right at the start.
Okay. Yeah. Everybody looks really threatening. I mean, there are the masks. And in fact, you wrote that you had an N95 mask on because obviously you are conscientious of that stuff. Now, a lot of these people are wearing face coverings, but they don't appear to be of the face coverings of the kind that would protect them against disease. It seems more like in place to protect their identities from them being recognized, perhaps.
Exactly. They're have masks on to conceal their identities. And I was, on the other hand, wearing an N95 because at that point there was no vaccine, and it was the deadliest day of the pandemic to date with 4,000 reported deaths.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was a real, real risk.
Now, so how far, obviously you never went through the magnetometers, you didn't go into the rally area, you stuck with the crowds and you kept snapping pictures all along, sometimes kind of surreptitiously because you didn't want these people to know you were taking their pictures?
I would say the majority of the images in the book, especially after the attack happened, the insurrection started at 12:55 at the Peace Monument. I would say most of the pictures were taken, where I have outstretched arms or I'm shooting from the hip, and usually looking in the general direction opposite of where I'm taking the picture, because these people are suspicious of me due to my my N95 mask, because many of them are COVID denialists,
right?
And my cameras, which identifies me and others me as a quote unquote fake news.
And then when they found out you're with Rolling Stone, that must have further inflamed them, because that's considered, counterculture or something, I guess.
Sure. A lot of people actually, they don't read Rolling Stone, so they don't know how political it is, and just that it's a music magazine.
Right.
And so a lot of people are like, oh, I love rock and roll too, the Proud Boys, once I said Rolling Stone, they're like, oh yeah, they're mocking me and doing voices like this, like, ew, I'm with Rolling Stone. And definitely didn't matter to them.
Again, we're speaking with Nate Gowdy. He's got a book out. It's just filled with photographs from January 6th at the Capitol. Did you ever go into the Capitol itself, or did you stay outside the whole time?
I had very poor cell reception and data, and so that wasn't really an option to see what was happening. And plus, you're I'm in survival mode. This photo right here that you have up was the second time I was attacked, just a moment after the five police patrols at the perimeter fence at the Peace Monument were swiftly overpowered, and this guy yells "F you" and shoves me off a 3-foot balustrade just for having a camera. And I won't say your question again.
I was asking if you ever made it into the Capitol. Instead, you were outside just shooting what was happening around you.
Yeah. So I never, never made it into the Capitol, because, everyone watching this unfold at home knew much more than I did. I thought the extent of the spectacle was at the inaugural staging area, where the attack started. I was with the front men when it all started, and then I was attacked by that individual in the last photo. And then I lost my position at the front of at the battlefront, and it's a mob, so it's really hard to navigate when you're in the middle of that kind of thing, and these surging bodies and men yelling all around you, war cries and adrenaline. And so I didn't know that the interior of the Capitol had been breached in 8 locations until around 4:20, when I summited a crow's nest scaffolding, and my phone's in this photo to the left of the middle finger. I summited that, and I discovered that they'd gotten inside, and my phone. That's when my phone started pinging with a barrage of concerned texts from loved ones. Uh-huh. And news alerts. And that's that's the first time I knew this scene right here, this spectacle of a space historically reserved for stately pomp and circumstance, and decorum and dignitaries, was overrun. I thought that was it.
I thought that was it too. I was sitting watching it unfold in real time from here in my studio, just in disbelief that this was happening. Then we saw I don't know who was doing live coverage, somebody, when I guess I'm drawing a blank on her name. The woman that was killed trying to crawl through the window to get into the speaker, to get into the House chamber, when she was wheeled out, you know, and the journalist, the reporter doing the stand up said, I think that's a body being wheeled out. I mean, it was surreal. It must have been terrifying for you. Now, have you ever been in the midst of like a combat zone in your photojournalist travels? Because this must have felt that way.
I'm no war photographer. No, I actually said I've always been drawn to politics, and I set out to photograph presidential politics starting in 2015. Since then, I've been to over 300 events across, politics and protest events across 25 states. And so I've seen it, I thought I'd seen it all. And, but no, I sought out politics, presidential politics in particular, because rallies and town halls are generally in contained spaces, stage spaces with, where the attendees have a fair expectation of being photographed. And so it felt safe. And so then when the first female president wasn't inaugurated and here we are, everything bled out into the streets, which ultimately have become, demonstrations become violent on both sides. And so I never thought we'd be here, but I've been trying to see the story through.
Now, have you been following? Did you sit riveted watching the hearings as they unfolded on television?
Sure did. I really, the hearings, it reminded me of my own, commitment to making this book. I was a lot, when the hearing started, everyone was like, get it out, and I was continuing to write the 5,000 words of contextual timestamped captions, pairing my observations with the general plot points of the day, kind of basically what's not in front of my lens, as well as what you're seeing in those images. And I got off track. I forgot where we were again.
Oh, that's okay. No, just, it's watching the hearings unfold hearings.
I was basically synthesizing lots of information into a digestible account. And I just felt that the hearings, the J6 committee has done a masterful job of telling the story of that day. I'm really kind of in awe of how nice of a job they've done, because so many people just think of chaos, but there's so many different aspects to the day. And I've really tried to make sense of it for readers of this book.
Right. So now you finish up the day, the Capitol's cleared out. You've got, I'm guessing you shoot digitally. You've got all your stuff. So you were on assignment for Rolling Stone. So what wound up going into the magazine from that day's work?
Yeah, well, print is not doing so well. So yeah. it went, the 25 of the images went on an online slideshow up, around noon on January 7th. And so, but this book contains 124 images I took from that day and in chronological order.
So when did you know you had a book?
Well, I've always been kind of photo book oriented and dreamed of doing this in my 12 years as a photographer. But I always thought it would be of the whole kind of the era. It would be a tomb of all these moments from all these events I've been to, and didn't think I would start here. I got the idea for it when in September of 2020, I was meeting my then partner's parents. And she had warned me not to talk about politics with them, as they're very Trumpian, and to redirect the conversation when her father would try to bait me. And well, I did a nice job until dinner time, and we had a few drinks in us, and he was droning on, Fox News, regurgitating Fox News talking points. And I said, hey, I was there. I was at the insurrection. And he blew his top.
Because you called it an insurrection?
Yeah, he's like, what insurrection? And this whole overcrowded Italian restaurant we were at looked in our direction, and we got into it. And I ended up picking up the tab because that's the kind of person he is. And then, it got worse from there, and it didn't help my relationship, but it did solidify my resolve in making this book and calling it exactly what it is, insurrection. An insurrection.
It absolutely was. It is. I don't know how anyone can call it anything different.
The literal definition. Although, this guy had been brainwashed by decades of Fox News's delusions, propaganda, and falsehoods. And lies, blatant lies. And so he probably thought it was, thinks it was a Fed insurrection, or that these people were tourists, or that, what else, or that Antifa dressed up in Trump caps and did this. And I'm here to say none of that is true. And all you have to do is look at, I have photos.
You do. You've got proof here. So not to get too personal, but are you still with this woman? And have you sent the father a copy of the book?
We're not. No, she basically, I love her to death. But I photograph insurrection, and she paints unicorns. And so politics, because of her parents, is very triggering for her. I've entertained the idea of sending her father a book and thanking him. But no, I don't think that would help anything.
Wow. I understand. But I wouldn't be able to hold my tongue with someone like that. The proof is right there. I mean, how could anybody watch what happened and deny it? But that's the reality we're in these days. So the picture I have up on the screen now, the time is 5:07:45. By then, the Capitol is being cleared out, right? But it looks like, is that tear gas?
That's tear gas. It was a very, very windy day, and there were, chemical pollutants throughout, that had infiltrated the air everywhere. There was no way to avoid it. And this here, it was worse, because the police reinforcements were going on for the first time going on the offensive. And so, I can tell you, I'm wearing an N95 among people who don't believe in COVID or wearing masks. I felt pretty smug much of the day, as they were coughing up a lung, on because of tear gas and caustic chemicals. And I could breathe just fine.
Wow. So do you have any kind of PTSD from this day? Have you been back to the Capitol since? Do you have a feeling of unease?
Great, great question. I'd like to say, a lot of people who are involved in that day have very real trauma.
Yeah.
And I was attacked twice, and I wasn't as afraid as I probably should have been in the moment, because I think I was probably confusing fear with excitement. I was just happy to be there, that I wasn't missing it. I had missed Charlottesville years before, and because I had been photographing a friend's wedding, and that really, I really felt bad about that, which is, something's wrong with me. But basically, I digress enough. I forgot. What was your question?
Now, about if you've been back to the Capitol and if you experienced any kind of PTSD.
Not that I know of. I'm definitely still processing that day, and kind of, especially when I see footage of it and documentaries and surveillance footage, and I see myself. And it's very scary to watch now in retrospect, but I'm fine. And the only time I've been back was, cause I do live in Seattle, was 2 weeks later for the Joe Biden's presidential inauguration. Uh-huh. And of course that was a fortified, barricades everywhere, fences everywhere. That was really a non-event to photograph unless you were at the ceremony, which they weren't letting people in. So many members of the press couldn't even see him be sworn in. And so even those, you know, on assignment for Rolling Stone. And so I was around the perimeter just kind of hunting for anything, you know, for photos, and like to think I did pretty good that day. But there wasn't much to photograph except for soldiers and police and journalists or just a, there were more journalists than demonstrators. And so basically, trolling for photos.
Wow. I mean, I'm scrolling through these photos, and if you're watching the video, you're seeing them quickly as they go by. Seeing them in the book, they are magnificent. It's a slice of history. We lived through something huge. It's not quite over yet, because I think that the man who inspired all this needs to be held accountable. Do you think he will? And do you think that your photographs from that day, your book, Insurrection, provides a good historical record, especially in this time?
So I'm proud and confused that this is literally the only photo book of that visually chronicles that day to date that exists. And I'm, that surprised me, because I'm just a you know, documentarian, you know, documentary fine art photographer from Seattle. And so that confuses me. And I think, you know, I'm very proud that these images have been used to hold people accountable. The FBI has been to my office. That was funny, because when the agent came, in the movies, they show their badge. Yeah. Well, his badge fell out of his wallet when he did that. And they didn't even have a hard drive that was formatted for Macs on them, you know, so they had to, that was funny. And so, you know, and here people think the deep state is so capable. And then I was the eyewitness in a 2-day landmark trial in Santa Fe in August, in which the defendant, Coy Griffin, his claim to fame is Donald Trump retweeted him when he said the only good Democrat is a dead Democrat. And he also happened to be an Otero County commissioner. And basically, the trial was the first since 1869 to bar him from holding office ever again.
Wow.
Because of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which is the disqualification clause. And the reason the plaintiffs filed that was not only to go after him, to set, you know, rough, not direct, but a precedent, in that it's a roadmap to try and other insurrectionists who will hold office. And so, Trump has evaded all accountability so far. So I don't like to make guesses, but I guess I'm just crossing my fingers.
You and me both. One last question for you, Nate Gowdy. This book almost didn't happen. So I talked about the day ends. You're wrapping up. You realize this, the amazing bits of history that you've got on your, I'm guessing, you know, SD cards, until you realize that you don't have your cameras anymore. What happened?
Yeah. So the insurrection happened on a Wednesday, and it was Friday, and I was spent. I'd stayed up all night that night, you know, on the 6th, editing, processing photos. And then I'd been through an insurrection. And so I was just spent and fatigued, and I was checking in with my dad while waiting for my train at Union Station in D.C. and realized I was running late for my train. And so I got up and accidentally left my backpack in my seat. And that backpack, you know, usually that's so it's right on me with all my most important things, my camera and my computer and my hard drives.
Oh,
and
God.
And I got back, I ran back, and it was probably 2-3 minutes, and it was gone. And that was the trauma I experienced. It was losing my documentation of the most historic thing I'd ever photographed. And that, you know, I would have given an arm or a leg for my photos back. And long story short, my community, it was humbling. My community really came through for me, trying to set me up to get back out there, you know, making more photos and just reminding me that it's not the photos that matters. It's me that who mm-hmm. matters. Mm-hmm. And an acquaintance on Facebook who I hadn't seen in maybe a decade and don't know too well, except for being acquaintances connected on social media, did some sleuthing and found it listed on the online marketplace. And that, you know, and so that was huge, but still it was like, wow, so close yet so far. And so so I reached out and they got spooked easily. And so I just did it, you know, through a Hail Mary and said, you know, hey, you know, that's my camera. It's unmistakably my camera. It's banged up and no one treats like it, and no one's going to buy it. It's beat to heck. And also that the computer that was with it is 6 years old. No, it's not worth anything either. And so no response for hours. I had lost hope again, which I felt very defeated, got on my plane and was adrenaline still going. When I landed in Seattle, my friends who we'd been messaging the seller through, said, hey, they want you to give them a call. And so, that's huge because phone number, I'd filed a police report and the police can do a lot, find out a lot with a phone number. And they had the Amtrak police. I felt like they'd been bored and this was an adventure for them. They went out of their way to help, but weren't optimistic, but now they were key because they said, well, hey, you need to lure them back to the scene of the crime because that's the only place they have jurisdiction. But I spoke to the seller, the thief on the phone, and they were all like, you know, praise be to God that he has brought us together and that we can help each other, you know, as they attempted to extort me for $2,000.
Oh my.
Again, long story short, my friend coordinated with staying with police who waited in the wings as he met with them, the next day, Monday. And once my friends identified all my things, the police closed in I'd like to note the thief, the individual, it was more than one person, but in this case they detained one person and he's banned for life from Union Station. I don't want this happening to other travelers, but I did not file a police report because that was never my intention. It was to get my things back and not to make this person's life harder. I mean, already. Yeah. Anyway.
Wow. Well, that was very nice of you. Hopefully that person learned a lesson.
I hope so. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think many of the insurrectionists did because, well, look what's happening in the House this week.
Well, I'd like to note that I have a photo in there of Robert Scott Palmer, who for a long time there had the longest sentence and 63 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I have a picture of him raising his shirt, pointing to his belly button because he had a rubber bullet belly button wound.
Right.
Oh. And he's yelling in the photo, you shot me at the police. I didn't do anything. And then, you know, it comes out and I didn't know who he was at the time that he'd been the guy who threw, you know, who hurled fire extinguisher at officers and had been throwing poles like spears. And it's just remarkable that these people, that this guy only got 63 months. You try throwing a fire extinguisher at the authorities, at law enforcement, and getting only 63 months.
Wow. That's him, the photograph on the right, right?
Yeah, that's him. And so, yeah, for the longest time, he had the longest sentence of only 63 months.
Wow. Well, the prosecutions are not done. You know, who knows? Maybe they'll pull out some of your photographs as evidence in some of these trials.
Quite a few of the photographs are on the FBI's most wanted list for that day.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Well, congratulations on the book. Is this your first?
It's my first Monograph. Yes, it's my second book. I was commissioned by Seattle Public Schools in 2020 to do a book, an only of its kind book as well, celebrating LGBTQIA plus students, families, and staff of the Seattle Public Schools.
Oh, how nice. I live in Florida. Something like that would never happen here under our current fascist governor.
And that's also why we haven't, you know, it's kind of flying under the radar, because my supervisor, the district's, you know, of 100 schools, as health manager, is afraid to promote it for fear that Fox News will get a hold of it. And you know, the families who participated, you know, who are out and proud will be harassed.
Right. Oh, what strange times we live in, you know. I don't understand some people. Nate Gowdy, thank you for joining us. Thank you for releasing this book, because it is a moment of history. I'm sure you can imagine children and grandchildren down the line, you know, looking back on your documenting one of the scariest days I've ever lived through.
I've had quite a few people, you know, kindly thank me for, you know, while adding that, you know, this is something they want their children and grandchildren to see, know, and study. And so this doesn't happen again. And that's very humbling. It's a first draft of history. And I'm, you know, and you people, viewers can, it's available at my website.
NateGowdy.com.
Yeah, and I have a lot of books to sell. So, you know, it's hard to self-publish.
Right. Now, on your website, there's a thing about the first edition, signed limited edition. That's already sold out. But what is available?
Yeah, the first edition soft cover run of over 600 books sold out in late summer, which felt great, meaning this whole endeavor has worked. Mm-hmm. And there is a desire for people to have something that they can hold and sit with, you know, and have, you know, and contemplate and point to and show their friends and loved ones. So now what's available is I have worked with a fabulous printer out of New Jersey. I have a 6x8 hardcover and a 9x11 hardcover. And I'd also like to, you know, shout out my editor, Lisa Van Dam Bates, who, you know, this book wouldn't be what it is without her. She's generally a horror filmmaker.
Oh, wow.
And a technical writing editor, she's a friend and brilliant, and she did this and killed it. And then also Michael Rowe, who's a Canadian author, this book wouldn't be complete without his introduction. And then I'm very proud that DC Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges, the officer who's probably second in name recognition from that day only to Michael Fanone as an officer defending the Capitol. I got acquainted with him at the trial in Santa Fe. Turns out he's an English major and a damn good writer. And so he penned the foreword in 1 week's time. I'm just very proud of the whole, the complete thing and all we put into it.
As you should be. Well, thank you for coming on today. It's a weird anniversary to mark, but one that we must, because as you said, we can never forget. This can't happen again. Nate Gowdy, the book is Insurrection. Get all the details at NateGowdy.com. Nate, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for sharing all this with us.
Hey, Nicole, it's thanks again for the opportunity. Thank you. Thanks for letting me talk about this stuff.
Nate Gowdy, photojournalist. And I got to tell you, if you were only listening to this this episode on an audio stream, you might really want to check out the video. It'll be up on YouTube. It'll also be posted on my website. I post every episode on the website with the date it aired. So for instance, today is January 9th, 2023. The episode is will be posted at NicoleSandler.com/1-9-23. Very simple. And it's amazing because we still have people. There's somebody in the chat room
Josh Quigley, who's like, it's not an insurrection when you're invited in. By the way, Josh, when you're invited is Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. When you're invited, as you wrote it, Y-O-U-R, it assumes that you're an invitation or something. Anyway, aside from being the grammar police, you're also wrong. Donald Trump did not have any authority to invite anybody into the Capitol. He could have invited them to the White House. You'll notice he didn't. And he's still arguing with people. You're the ones that choose not to see. It's on video. Oy, oy, oy. Why didn't Nancy accept the National Guard when they were offered? Josh Quigley, turn off Fox and read the January 6th report, you fucking moron. Hey, Josh, I got a little song for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
All right, Josh, I hope you heard that. That's for you. All right. Robert Naples, hi. What'd you think of Nate?
That was a great interview. I enjoyed it. That was good.
Good. And you didn't even get to see the pictures, right? You're in the car.
No, I'm driving. I'm from going back to Clearwater, back to Naples. And you got me out of 28 minutes. It was beautiful. I mean, I don't even know where that, but 20 minutes. I was riveted. It was really, really good. You know, I didn't know that Amtrak had their own police.
I didn't know that either. Cool. I didn't know that either.
I'm not going to pee on the seat anymore.
Okay.
Anyway, and by the way, Josh, go fuck yourself.
Really?
Listen here. No, listen, Josh. Nobody was getting in. It was COVID. There was nobody getting in that White House. Nobody was to be invited there. You dumb buckler.
Tell him what you really think. Yep.
I'm done with him.
Yep.
Now, listen, I got the Brazil thing. You don't think at this point they went in there and they destroyed a few things and they got nothing out of it. What did they get?
Well, they 1,200 arrests overnight. It took us months.
I'm so jealous. Nicole.
Right, you and me both.
I'm jealous. You know, how is it that we didn't have a telethon a day after that say, hey, any one of you motherfuckers know this asshole? What
right.
about this one?
Yep.
Oh, okay, hey,
yep.
Here's $100. $200. I would have given $1,000 to fucking for half of the bastards that did the worst damage. I would have chipped in for that.
Yeah.
You know, you know what? Their own family would have turned them in and said, you know what? I just saw my uncle. You know what?
Yep.
That's a kid down the street. You know, give me $100.
Right.
You know, it would have been perfect. We would have got every one of them. Every one of them.
Yeah, you know what the problem was? Here's the problem, Robert. Too many of the cops were in line with them. That was, yes. I think, the problem. Too many of them were sympathetic to the insurrectionists.
Just like the Secret Service, motherfucker, I can't think right now, I'm driving. But the Secret Service, I got a bad feeling that one or two or three are still there.
Well, apparently, so does Joe Biden. He even said that it's weird that he can't trust his own Secret Service detail. So at least we're not the only ones thinking it. It's funny that they're the ones who talk about the deep state. Excuse me.
Yeah. All right.
It's opposite world.
All right, listen, I gotta pay attention to the road.
Yes, you do.
Hey, thank you. Hey, Josh, again, go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
thanks, Nicole. Ciao.
Interesting. Bye, Robert. It's interesting that Josh has been silent in the chat room ever since I played a little song for him. Guess he didn't like the welcome that we gave him. It's what happens when you're a troll and you invade my chat room. Okay, good news. Tomorrow is that Tuesday. Gotta Laugh will be here tomorrow. So we got lots to talk about. Okay? Lots to do. And by the way, for those of you who are wondering what happened to Will Bunch last week, damn, he forgot about us on Wednesday. Just totally spaced out. I get it. Believe me, I've been there. He just forgot. He was very apologetic. But then he turns up on the broadcast on Thursday, the next day. Anyway, hopefully, maybe we'll get Will on this week. Josh Quigley, go home. All right. With that, we're done. I'll see you tomorrow. Laffy's here. Oh, now go watch the House vote on the rules. That should be a lot of fun. All right. We're done. I'll leave you with the news. And I hope you don't mind hearing that part of Hakeem Jeffries' speech again, because it's in What's News Today. See you later. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The old adage has now been updated. If at first you don't succeed, try 14 more times. The chaos that unfolded in the House last week with 14 failed votes for Speaker before Kevin McCarthy gave away every bargaining chip available and seemingly then some, he won the gavel in the 15th round of voting after the Florida man, Matt Gaetz, finally relented. But at what cost? We'll get to that in a moment. When the 15th vote ended and McCarthy finally was declared winner, it fell to the new leader of the House Democrats, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, to introduce McCarthy and hand over the gavel. Jeffries used the opportunity to deliver an epic speech detailing the literal ABCs of the difference between today's Democrats and Republicans.
House Democrats will always put American values over autocracy, benevolence over bigotry, the Constitution over the cult, democracy over demagogues, economic opportunity over extremism, freedom over fascism, governing over gaslighting, hopefulness over hatred, inclusion over isolation, justice over judicial overreach, knowledge over kangaroo courts, liberty over limitation, maturity over Mar-a-Lago, normalcy over negativity, opportunity over obstruction, people over politics, quality of life issues over QAnon, reason over racism, substance over slander, triumph over tyranny, understanding over ugliness, voting rights over voter suppression, working families over the well-connected, xenial over xenophobia. Yes, we can over you can't do it, and zealous representation over zero-sum confrontation. We will always do the right thing by the American people.
Impressive. Now, if you think things will get easier moving forward, you're not paying attention. The 118th Congress, now officially in session, is back today, Monday. First thing on the agenda is getting the rules package for the next 2 years passed. But many of the demands that McCarthy reportedly gave into weren't his assurances to give. So McCarthy's first big test in governing his Republican majority comes in a planned Monday night vote on the rules package, which Politico describes as, quote, the devolution of power away from leadership and towards the House Freedom Caucus. They're cautioning that if Monday night's vote goes down, the entire project unravels, and McCarthy can only lose 4 votes. That's a tall order considering the makeup of the Republican caucus. In a somewhat related story, did you see what happened in Brazil over the weekend? Supporters of former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro broke into the country's congressional building, Supreme Court, and presidential palace on Sunday. Brazil's newly elected president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, described events there as barbaric and said a lack of security had allowed Bolsonaro's fascist supporters to breach barriers set up by the military. He also emphasized those responsible, quote, will be found and punished, as police made at least 400 arrests in that first night alone. Lula blamed Bolsonaro for inflaming his supporters' baseless allegations about potential election fraud. The president's allies also raised questions about how public security forces in the capital were so unprepared and easily overwhelmed by rioters who had been planning this event on social media for days. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Yeah, these breaches came about a week after the inauguration of Lula, who defeated Bolsonaro in a runoff election on October 30th. Bolsonaro reportedly denounced his supporters' actions on Sunday. His office previously said it would cooperate with the transition of power, but he hasn't conceded. And make no mistake,
He fueled the efforts. As of Monday morning, Brazilian police had cleared all the protesters from the government offices. President Biden issued a statement saying, quote, "I condemn the assault on democracy and on the peaceful transfer of power in Brazil. Brazil's democratic institutions have our full support, and the will of the Brazilian people must not be undermined." Congressional Democrats are pressing Republicans to condemn the attack. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries called it a, quote, "sad but familiar sight," while some members are calling on the U.S. to extradite Bolsonaro from Florida. Yes, he's in Florida, just saying. By the way, Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell have both been silent so far. Closer to home, President Joe Biden visited the U.S.-Mexico border on Sunday, his first official visit as president, amid record levels of border crossings. Biden's visit to El Paso appeared largely focused on enforcement issues and speaking with border enforcement personnel. His flight was met by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who gave Biden a letter outlining what he described as chaos on the border. Biden now heads to Mexico today, where he'll discuss immigration issues with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. So you do know that COVID is still here and it's getting more serious, right? The new variant, XBB.1.5, features mutations that are helping it spread more easily than other variants, jumped from 2% of U.S. COVID cases in early December to more than 27% in the first week of January. The WHO has called this new variant the most transmissible version of the Omicron variant yet. This new XBB.1.5 is believed to account for more than 70% of cases in the Northeast. There's no evidence that it's causing more severe illnesses than other strains, but it has caused a new problem for public health officials as fresh misinformation blaming vaccines for the rise of the new variants is spreading, thanks to people like, oh, Elon Musk at his new Twitter. Get vaccinated and wear a mask. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.